Hello, my friends. Before we begin this episode, I want to tell you about a new workshop that I have for you. And it's all about the three pillars of confident parenting. In this workshop, which is going to be 1.5 to 2 hours, we're going to talk about the parenting map and how you can use the three principles of the parenting map to gain more confidence in your parenting and take better care of your children and yourself so that you can enjoy calmer days and build better relationship with your children. If you want to learn more about that, go to apparentlyparent.com/workshop. Now, to the episode. Hello, hello there, and welcome to episode number 43 of the Apparently Parent podcast. I'm really happy that you joined me today because we are talking all about Montessori education, which is really interesting, and it's a topic that I know nothing about. This is why I have a wonderful guest today who's an expert in Montessori education and an expert in helping parents navigate the waters of Montessori education in school and at home. So, without further ado, let's put the intro and roll that tape. Welcome to the Apparently Parent podcast. My name is Iran Katz, and I'm a clinical psychologist, a parenting counselor, and also a father. In this show, we combine the art of parenting with the science of psychology. So, if you want to understand your children and yourself better, lead your family into calmer waters, and reach the end of the day with a smile on your face, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Iran Katz. All right, friends, my guest today is a Montessori educator and a consultant, and she's helping parents navigate Montessori learning at home so they can be really present with their children and avoid overwhelm, and they can feel capable and confident in supporting their children's natural learning processes. And we're going to talk about that today. She holds a bachelor's degree in early childhood education and also a Montessori certification for children in ages 3 to 6. She spent nearly a decade working with children and families in nonprofit youth organizations and public education and in Montessori schools, both in the US and in Mexico. Her name is Charlotte Peck, and I'm very happy to have her on today. Charlotte, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So thank you. And I always start in this year, 2020, I always start this conversation with asking my guests, where are you from? Tell us a little bit how things are down there with everything that's going on and what's it like?
Yes. So I currently live in Oaxaca, Mexico, which is one of the southern states in Mexico. And it's a little bit complicated to explain how it is. It's changed a lot over this past year. And currently what it looks like is the residents and locals are staying home. People are doing the best that they can to stay safe. Masks are mandatory and restaurants are open to capacity a little bit. But we also have reports that cases are increasing and hospitals are at capacity again. So it's difficult to know what will happen. So I think another lockdown is around the corner for us. So yeah, we're all doing the best that we can though.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how things are not, you always never know what's going to happen in life, but it's so accentuated in this year. And yeah. And you have restaurants. I miss restaurants.
We do. I've only taken it up 2 times, only on outdoor areas, but otherwise yeah. Delivery, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've been to a real restaurant in almost a year. but we do have delivery, so we have that.
Yes, it's strange for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're here to talk about Montessori, and this is something that I can really admit that I know very little about. And I'm very happy to talk with you because I will learn more about that. And maybe we can start by you just telling us a little bit about that. What does it mean? Maybe some myths around that. What does it not mean? Because I'm sure that my listeners may have some misinformation around that. So yeah, I think that's a good starting point.
I agree. And that it really is a great starting point. And that's often where I start in conversations with people, is they usually tell me what they might know or maybe what they have heard about Montessori. And we go from there. And I was thinking about this today, actually, that One of the biggest myths around Montessori is that it's very exclusive and that it's for a certain echelon of people. And unfortunately, historically, that has been the case. And luckily, as more awareness goes with spreading Montessori and there are more public Montessoris and more outreach programs, I think that concept is really changing and it's becoming more accessible and more relatable, which is really how it was founded and what the intention of Montessori originally was supposed to be. And with that, I think there are two schools of thought with people that are not sure about Montessori. One idea is that Montessori children are very wild and free and they are lawless and no rules. And, their clothes are on backwards, their shoes are on the wrong feet. And that is true. And we do allow for that. And then the other extreme of that is Montessori is so rigid and they don't allow for imagination and they don't allow for play. And they have these rules and they're so mean and they have children scrubbing the floor. And while that
Wow,
is true,
I never
children
heard
do
that.
scrub. Well, that is actually something that you might see in the 3 to 6 year old classroom. And to back up a little bit, so yes, I do specialize in children ages 3 to 6 years old. And so much of what I refer to will be relevant to that particular age group. And so, yes, these are the extremes. They're wild and free, or it's very, very rigid. And I think that it's easy to see both of those. And Montessori has elements of each of those. But when you really dive in, it's such a depth and breadth that's so much more than that. And the essential component is that it is following the nature of the child. And what we know about children from observation and studies, and what we know about development, is that yes, children sometimes are wild and free. And yes, sometimes they really are reliant on structure and really crave and need that dependability. And so Montessori offers both of those elements according to where the child is in their development, what they need at that particular moment in time, and kind of how that fits into the whole child.
Right. So, that sounds great. And it's so funny how those two extremes are really opposites of each other, those two myths. It's amazing. And I as you were talking, I was thinking to myself, of asking you where did it come from? Or even what does Montessori mean? Is it a name of the developer? I have no idea. What's the origin story, if you like?
Yes, the origin story. Dr. Maria Montessori was an Italian physician in the late 1800s. She was born in the late 1800s. The actual date escapes me now. And, she is an interesting character in her own right. And she was one of the first female physicians in Italy. And she developed this scientific pedagogy, as she called it, from working with young children in the slums of Italy, as she referred to it, the slums of Rome, and working with children with neurodivergence and children in asylums. And that is where she developed a lot of her techniques and her methods from observing children and working with children and taking different insights and different schools of thought at the time from psychologists and different educational pedagogies. So what all of this culminates into is that Montessori observed in children these natural tendencies or natural inclinations. And so, by observing what children would do in given environments or different situations or with different materials, she discovered that children naturally want to learn and they have a natural curiosity, and that they want to construct their own world around them, and that given any situation or any environment, children will learn. And so that was something that was pretty revolutionary at the time. There's different schools of thought, nature versus nurture, and her idea was a mix of both of this, and how children interact in their environment is one of the key aspects of Montessori as well.
Okay, so I'm just wondering, what does it look like? You specialize in 3 to 6 years old. So we're not actually talking about schools, you know, in the literal sense of, you know, sitting in front of a teacher and learning, but maybe I guess that in the school years, it would, Montessori schools would look different, but how does it look like in those ages, you know, for preschoolers, for kindergarten children? How would Montessori framework or education would look like as opposed to what most, you know, treatment as usual, as we tend to say in psychology?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, and starting with the Montessori classroom, when you walk into a Montessori classroom, you see child-size furniture, you see shelves, you see tables, you see children working on the floor on a mat, you see movement all around, you see different age groups. That's one of the hallmarks of Montessori education, is that children are mixed together in an age group so that there's peer-to-peer learning. And another aspect that we love to say as Montessorians is that when you walk into the classroom, you don't see the teacher for a while. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is very important to us, as we call ourselves the guide on the side, rather than the sage on the stage. And so I think that is an important distinction, is that it's not about the teacher, it's about the children. And we are always observing so that we can be the most attentive to the individual needs of the child. So I think that is one of the biggest things. And I think that is where the myth of Montessori classrooms being wild and open comes from, is that you don't walk in and there's no desks or rows and children are not engaging in the same activities at the same time. And that's a huge shift for many parents and even for teachers, as you are going into that, learning how to navigate and negotiate all of these different scenarios at the same time. And it's something that comes over time as you're building community, and it really works. And I would encourage anyone, I know now is not the correct time, but if you can observe in a Montessori classroom, there is a certain magic that happens that's very difficult to explain. How children are busy and focused and engaged while so much is happening around them, but they're able to concentrate on their small world that they're in.
And if we're taking it a couple of years later into school years, does it, what would that look like?
So in the older years in the elementary, so they would group it in the next age group, lower elementary, maybe 6 years old to 9 years old, and 9 years old to 12 years old. And in those ages, you would see something quite similar. They still have shelves. There's a lot of freedom of movement and freedom of choice. Because of the natural interests and inclinations of that age group, there's more collaborative work, although you do see collaborative work in the 3 to 6 age group as well. And yeah, it's very much the same. You may see a child with a huge map who is labeling all the different countries in Africa, while another child is learning with grammar and he's jumping up and down or responding to verbs or something like that. So very much the same, where you see teachers to the side and there's groups of children working at different places and different things.
And what I gather here is that, and you did mention it before, that this notion of following the child and following the child's lead, it's like one of the most fundamental pillars here, right? Yes. But, you know, so not trying to be the devil's advocate here, but it does bring to mind the question of where does it end, and when do you need to, you know, how far can you follow the child? Because sometimes I guess the teacher or the guide on the side does have to step in. So where do you usually put the line here, or how do you guide parents around that?
Yes, and there is no short answer, because it's a very adaptable thing. You have to be very adaptable and very flexible flexible as the adult in the environment. And you're absolutely right. It is not a free-for-all. You are still the adult. And so the way that we frame that is freedom within limits. So allowing the children to have choices, but as the adult, you are responsible for presenting those choices to that child. So one example that I love to give to parents, because I feel like it's so very relatable, is when it comes to your child putting on their shoes or getting dressed. I think that many parents can relate, especially with younger children, to a struggle of, I don't want to do this. I'm not going to do this, or not this shoe, not this shirt, not these pants. So a helpful framework is, we're going to put your shoes on. Do you want to put your right shoe on first or your left shoe on first? And having that tiny little bit of choice and just the turn of the phrase makes such a huge difference to a young child. And as an adult, again, we are still making it clear, it's not a choice, shoes on, shoes off. The shoes are going on, but they still feel a little bit empowered, and that works towards them feeling that independence and self-governance just with these tiny little bits.
Yeah, I really relate to that, and I love that. And you said there's freedom within limits. And I think that, you know, I come from my background in attachment theory, and we always talk about the attachment figure, which usually the parents are the attachment figures, also teachers and other adults. But one of the things that makes someone an attachment, a good attachment figure, a secure attachment figure, is their ability to be reliable and to be constantly there without giving the security without imposing. And I think this ability to let the child feel secure enough that they are free to explore the world. This is what we're talking about, and you can't do that without creating the boundaries, because I used to have this kind of conversation with parents all the time, that children they must have boundaries. This is why they're always testing their boundaries, to see that they're still there. Because, you know, if you walk on, I have this image in my mind right now, that if you go to the top floor, to the roof of a tower, and, you know, and there's no boundary around it, it's really scary. It's really scary to look to the side. You have to stay in the center. But if you have these protective walls around you, you're free to roam. So I love that, and that's, you know, that's something that I think every parent should know, how to be there and be on the side and step in when needed. And yeah, and giving the example you gave of giving choice is it's very empowering, especially for children at that age.
Yes, and I completely understand and agree with what you're saying, that, you know, we need to be that reliable structure. And again, that goes back to one of the myths, thinking that Montessori is so rigid, is that we do provide these limits and these boundaries so that children can feel free, so that they do feel like they have these choices, because we have already set this for them. We have taken this this part of the equation away, and it's a dance. It definitely is. It's, you know, as teachers, we don't always get it right. I know that parents don't always get it right. And luckily, there are a lot of opportunities with young children to try and try again. And yes, providing that reliability allows them to explore, just as you said.
So what's it all about with scrubbing the floors?
Well, so I guess the first thing to sort of explain is that when Montessori was developing her methods, and when she created her first school, it was a replication of the home. And so, and in fact, the 3 to 6 age group is called, well, depending the language, Casa dei Bambini, or Children's House, or Casa de los Niños. And so essentially, it was a place for children to go to be at home. And so again, the child's furniture is the correct size for them and appropriate for their development. The tools that they have accessible to them are usable with their small hands and their size. And so Montessori saw that children in the community were invested in each other and invested in taking care of each other and taking care of their environment. That when they felt a sense of purpose and responsibility, that these sorts of activities of the home, once they were presented and seen as a viable option, that children would choose these activities as a way to contribute, but also a way to find a sense of inner satisfaction and find purpose and meaning. And for example, when it comes to scrubbing the floor, there are systems that are in place for a child. And that also provides reliability for the child, is that there's a predictable sequence that you have to follow in order to be somewhat successful with the work. We wouldn't really say that. But for example, the child would take a bucket and then they need to go get water and then they need to get soap and then they use a brush and then they need to clean it up. And it's these steps and this reliability and the repetition that allows for the inner satisfaction and, again, building that self-governance and developing concentration in the child. And for a young child, what Montessori saw and what we see in classrooms is that this simple activity, which we adults maybe loathe or seem mundane, that it's so dense for the young child and that they are able to spend so long with this particular material. And so again, this goes with following the child and their interest. Well, if they want to be involved in the bubbles and the water and scrubbing the floor, then it's satisfying a need that maybe we are not privy to as adults, but that's sort of the mystery of what's going on in the inner child. So allowing these different opportunities for the child, again, to choose from is a fundamental aspect.
And I guess it's not really about scrubbing the floors.
Right.
That's not
it's
the goal
process.
Here. It reminds me how my daughter is 3 years old right now. And for example, when she's taking a bath, she loves to quote unquote clean the walls with the bubble bath and everything. So it's not about the end goal, it's about the fun of the process and the game in that. And you and I both know that play is all about, you know, trying new things and you know, mm-hmm. practicing everything in life. So yeah, that's
absolutely
one thing.
Yes. And so and this goes back, and you said your daughter is three. Three-year-olds love water. It's just something they love exploring. They love bubbles. They love making huge messes and trying to figure out how to clean it up. And that, and Montessori, something I haven't touched on yet, is that she had or developed these ideas of sensitive periods. And so sensitive periods fall within planes of development. So as I said, Montessori has multi-age groupings, and Montessori defined planes of development as 0 to 6 years old, 6 years old to 12 years old, and so on in 6 year increments. And her belief and our belief is that within these planes of development, there are certain characteristics or tendencies that kind of unite, and then things tend to change as the child switches over to another plane of development. And so in this first plane of development, some sensitive periods, which I'm sure you can identify from your children, that they have a love for small objects. They are sensitive to language. We know this is when language development is an explosion. They are attracted to order, even though their order may look different than our order, but they do see order, you know, the way they line up their toys or the way they want something a certain way. And so again, that goes again into understanding the fundamental aspects of what children naturally do and then providing activities to support and encourage that.
So it's basically about taking, I understand now the concept of following the lead of the child. You're taking the natural tendencies of exploring the world, and there is some kind of structure to that. It reminds me of years long ago when I had my bachelor's degree in psychology, and we learned about the work of Jean Piaget, who kind of structures how children learn about the world and about the physics of the world and all the rules about, you know, everything around that. I don't remember the details at all, but it seems to me like you're trying to follow the lead of the child of what is interesting for you right now. How are you learning about the world? Because, and we know that from studies done today, that even in their first year, children are really like little cute scientists learning about the world and learning how the world works. And it's kind of amazing. So what you're saying is we are trying to notice that and following the lead and give them the tools, the literal physical tools and the emotional and cognitive tools to play with that and learn as they grow up.
Absolutely. And this first period of 0 to 6 Montessori called the absorbent mind. And that is the, as you said, they're just soaking everything in and things come naturally to children at this age. And so it's, you know, there's so much emphasis on early childhood education because this is just such an imperative time in growth and development. Yeah. And I mean, actually, one of my favorite Montessori quotes, there is no man existing who has not been formed by the child he once was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just so perfect. It just sums it up. Like, of course, we have to treat children with dignity, kindness, empathy, and respect because that they're forming. And this is what will come out of it.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. And that's so cool to see how, you know, things really tie up together, because as I've said, I had no idea what Montessori is all about, but I can really, really identify and relate with a lot of the things that you say. And also seeing how, without knowing that, without knowing the work of Maria Montessori and everything that is there today, some of these things are applied in my own work with parents, in my own parenting, and even in a way in the institutions that, you know, that I know of. For example, my daughter, she goes to a kindergarten that is not labeled as Montessori, but at least some of the things that you describe, I can see them taking into play over there, for example, which is pretty nice. So I wanted to ask you, and maybe that now it's a good time, how what's your own story around that? How did you get into this work?
Yes, so my own origin story.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, I did not do well in school. Traditional education did not work for me. And it's something that I have found in many teachers that I've worked with and in the Montessori community and many parents, is that often they come to Montessori or they're interested in Montessori because something wasn't working for them. Mm-hmm. And when they were a child, or their schooling experience, or their experience with their parents for whatever reason. So I am very similar in that way, that I didn't know what was wrong with traditional education. I couldn't really put a finger on it. And I remember being in the library one time. I think I was actually skipping class in high school and I went to the library and I found...
You're one of the cool kids.
That's debatable. And so I found this book and I came across Montessori, and I remember just kind of reading it. And I remember reading about practical life and practical life skills. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes back to, you know, scrubbing the floor or dressing yourself or any of the activities with daily life. And I thought, oh, wow, you know, this is something. This, you know, this is something that I feel like I would have benefited from. And seeing how education related to real life, because I feel like for me, that was the disconnect, that I couldn't see how my traditional school had anything to do with living. And So for me, I pursued it from there. There were not any Montessori schools where I lived. I spent my teenage years in a rural part of North Carolina, and nobody I really knew went to a Montessori school or had heard of it. So it was something that I pursued and did a lot of self-study. And in college, I even thought that I would do public education, and I spent some time in a public school kindergarten. But I really still went back to Montessori because it just encompassed so much more than an educational pedagogy. It really is more of a lifestyle and a philosophy. And for me, something I've written about recently is that also for the adults that are involved in Montessori, there's a process of unlearning and relearning that happens that ends up being so beneficial as the adult who is involved in this process. So while we may be there for the child, absolutely, it also ends up transforming adults as well.
Yeah. I think parenting is all about personal growth as well, but you can really see how, you know, this unlearning of the ways of the past for us can benefit both you, the parent, and your child. So that's part of a beautiful process that sometimes, you know, we go through as parents. Yeah. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. And you know, would you want to tell us a little bit about the work you're doing today with parents? Because I understand that you help parents with that, and there's a course you're developing around that. Maybe you want to share a little bit.
Yes. So I was a Montessori teacher for several years. And as I mentioned, I was a Montessori teacher at a dual language school, most recently in the US and here in Mexico also. And I've always loved parent education. And I always love that moment of, you know, working with parents and them having sort of an aha of, oh, wow, okay, like I could just ask them which shoe they want to put on first or something like that.
I love those.
Yes, isn't that great? Ah, right. Hold on to that for sure. And yes, yeah, so I was teaching and my current work came out of COVID because as schools were shutting down, parents were home with their children in a way they hadn't been before, with trying to manage their own work from home and having kids and trying virtual school. And it was just, everything was different. And so what I found as a teacher is that parents really needed so much more support, like the behind the scenes support that I was not available to do as a teacher of a class of children of 35, I think I had at the time. And so what I found is that working on a smaller scale and being able to work more personally with parents was the best way for me to serve children and families because I wasn't with the children anymore. And so it made the most sense to support parents in this way. And so that's what I do now. And I love it in a way that I couldn't have anticipated. And it's very rewarding to just see that side of the journey because I'm so used to working with children and seeing their progress and then relating what I see to the parents, where it's just a different shift where they are sharing with me what they observe and we have a different dynamic there. So there are a couple of ways that I am working with parents currently, and I will sometimes do just consultations if a parent has a particular question, whether it be a behavior issue or how to present a particular material. Or I work with them in longer term, setting up the home environment, assessing their space, thinking about what works best for their child or children and that family. And then I also work with the parents to write activities or lessons or curriculum for their child, depending on the age and the appropriateness of it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And you did mention how this line of work for you stemmed out from this crazy year that we're having with COVID and everything. And maybe we can talk a little bit how, you know, if you have any thoughts of how parents can use some of the principles of some of the this knowledge or kind of work with to handle this situation? Or because I'm sure that there's going to be studies about how many parents shifted their way of lives and education, even in little ways during this time, because we were all forced to kind of homeschool in a way and change stuff. So how does it play here for you?
Yes. And the first thing that I want to say is that I applaud any parent that is doing this. This is so unprecedented, and it's as if things weren't hard enough, right? I mean, yeah. I know that it's so difficult, and you may feel like you're making it up as you're going along. And I was talking to a parent just yesterday, and she's like, oh, I feel like I've made so many mistakes. And I understand it's so overwhelming, and it's such a process aside from this that's happening. And so I think the first thing is to take care of yourself in any way that you can. Think about ways to take care of yourself as a parent and what that looks like for you. Setting up times for you to have renewal so that you can be available and be present. And so much of what I would say is find what works for your family. Mm-hmm. And if you try something and it doesn't work, tweak it and try something else. And it's so much of a process. And to give yourself grace and give your child space. That is usually what I say.
I love that.
You know, it, that really is one of the first thing, you know, is that your child, as I said, your child is going to learn. Your child is curious. Your child will find something in their environment to be interested in and to be excited about. And that the greatest, one of the greatest gifts is to step back and to allow space for that and let them explore. And I think that it's very easy to get caught up in the idea that, well, I used to send my child to school 7 hours a day and they were learning so much and now they're going to be so deficient. And really, when your child is at school, there is so many social interactions and repetition and procedures and transitions and things that maybe aren't directly learning, that when your child is at home, it's just such a different environment. And so I hope that it takes some pressure off of parents knowing that your child is going to be okay and you're already doing wonderfully for your child in that space. And when it comes to applying some of this Montessori, as I said, giving your child space, allowing them freedom within limits and offering them choices. And the most basic way to incorporate that I have found and what I recommended to parents even before the pandemic was to invite your child to be part of the family community. And so what that can look like is that your child helps and participates with preparing meals or cleaning up after meals or folding laundry according to their age and ability. You know, even your three-year-old probably can fold a washcloth. It may not look like what you would expect, but it's something. And those are so valuable and so meaningful. And keeping that connection and not worrying so much about what the quote-unquote academic side might look like.
Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. And I think I really love, and I want to just repeat that in marker, that the giving yourself some grace and giving your children space, that's a gold nugget here, because I think especially during this time, and you know, parenting is hard no matter how you look at it. Parenting is hard. It's wonderful. It's everything, but it's also hard. It's a hard job and it's a 24/7, you know, job and doesn't really pay that well. So, but it, especially during these times with all the uncertainty, and it's up to us to hold everything and to be, again, to be the secure attachment figure, to be the bigger and wiser, to be the leader, to be whatever you want to call it. And it's hard because we don't know where we're going. So as long as people can find the way to embrace what is happening, to embrace their own families, to find the ways to enjoy these times, because between you and me and everybody else listening, during lockdowns, the first one, which was for here in Israel, it was 2 months, maybe almost 10 weeks, And it wasn't easy. It was confusing. It was sometimes frightening because it was only the beginning of everything. But we also really bonded. And I could especially see that between my two kids. He's 7 years old and she's 3 years old. And, you know, that's a nice gap, age gap, but sometimes it leads to to fights. But they really bonded because they had so much time to spend together. So if you can shift your thinking and seeing things from that perspective, that's so great. And I can really see how learning more about this line of thought and practice of Montessori in schools and in home can really help you with that, because it's embracing your child and honoring them in what they like and what they love and working with that. And if you can find a ways to play with them, to play with that, and instead of like trying to mold them to, you have to do this and you have to do that. And I'm pushing it to the extreme just to put a point here, but I can really see how, you know, good things can flower and blossom from that.
Absolutely. Yes. Very much giving your child space. And I'm so glad, you know, bringing up play. That's right. These are children. They need to have fun. And as adults, yeah. Like that, you know, again, it goes from following the child and observing the child, and the child will reveal themselves to you. They will show you what they want and what they need. And so it's just a matter of backing up and like allowing that freedom.
Yeah. Awesome. So if people who listen to this, they want to learn more about Montessori at large and on your work, and maybe work with you or whatever you have to offer, are there any, these are two questions here. Are there any recommended resources? You know, if I want to read more about Montessori and learn more about you and your work, where do they go?
Okay, so I myself have a website, charlottepeck.com, and I'm also on Instagram at Montessori Charlotte. And there I share a lot of things that come up from my experiences, some activities that I have from children and working with parents. So to learn more about me and my work, that's a great place to go.
Okay, and just say everything will be in the show notes for this episode, which will be on apparentlyparent.com/43.
Perfect. Yes. And when it comes to finding out more about Montessori, really my best advice is to go with your instinct and maybe look at a couple accounts and follow a few places. I know that American Montessori Society has some good succinct information. It's easy to get overwhelmed. So I say also it's okay to tune out the noise and just follow a couple of things that make sense for you.
All right. Cool. That's a really good advice, because I know that if you start to, you know, just Google it, you can go down a rabbit hole and you will not find your arms and your legs. So
absolutely,
that's why I think following a couple of people who talk about that, just like you, is a good place to start. So again, I'll put the links to your website and your Instagram account and on apparentlyparent.com/43, which are the show notes for this episode. And just before we wrap up, I want to ask you a final question, which is a question I ask everybody on the show, my universal question. And it goes like this. If you could go back in time to before you became a mom and have you know, take yourself to a cup of coffee or whatever you like to drink in those days and have a chat. What would you like to tell your younger self?
Wow, that is a psychologist question, isn't it?
Guilty.
If the shoe fits. Wow, I think be more kind to yourself. You're doing better than you think. And allow others to be kind to you. And you know, finding more of a community. And that is something I mentioned, sort of, that Montessori really was that community for me in a way that I hadn't known before, because I went through this unlearning and relearning with other people who were doing the same. So I think, yeah, take it easy.
Right. That's I think that's the best advice. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. I did an episode a couple of episodes ago about self-compassion, and I think this is something that we never think about and we tend to forget. So yeah, be kind to yourself and know, even if you don't feel like it, you know that you're doing good, you're doing well. Children, that's my addition for that. Okay, children, they don't break so easily.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And the hallmark of if I go back to my own background, the hallmark of secure attachment is not being a quote unquote perfect parent. It's the ability to fix things after they, again, quote unquote break, because this is what makes relationships better.
Absolutely, show up.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. And I say the same thing to parents about children. And, you know, they kind of give me a side look for a second when I say, your kids are going to be fine. Because I believe they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. So thank you so much for this eye-opening conversation. I know a lot more now than I did an hour ago. And this is why I love doing these talks in the podcast, and I think there's a lot to for me here to learn more about Montessori and the ideas that it brings into children's lives and parents' lives, and I don't know, I feel like saying that before we started, when we kind of we emailed back and forth before starting this conversation, I was in a place because I didn't know anything about Montessori and other, you know, quote unquote alternative educational systems or methods. And I think there was a place for me that was like, I don't know, I don't want to use the word scared, you know, but, you know, kind of skeptic. And you know, I don't know, I have this association like a boomer and hippies. Like, like, you know,
yes,
although yeah, you know, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, the baby boomers and the hippies, like those crazy people, and mm-hmm. and I'm so glad that I'm not stuck in those notions, and I'm opening my mind to see those things and actually to see how these things play out in my own thinking, in my own family, in my children's lives as well. So this is the way to go, because I, in my work, and I think one of the most important things for me when I work with parents in one-on-one work and online, is that you have to find your own way and to realize what are your own values? What is your own purpose as a parent? This is one third of my framework. It's all about purpose, and realizing what is true for your own children, and what feels right for you when it comes to education and when it comes to discipline. And there are no rights and wrongs here. If we allow ourselves to be flexible enough, and there are red flags, there are red lines. Okay, but when we open up to different ways of thinking, we just become so much, we become richer, and we benefit from that as parents and our children as well. So that's so great.
Absolutely. Well, I'm so happy to hear that you have learned something and gained something from this, Beth, and this conversation. And you know, as I say, my work is to demystify Montessori, because I think it does sort of have, as we discuss, some myths or a stigma or something. And, you know, Montessorians aren't really one to go and put themselves out there and say, hey, everyone should be part of Montessori, because that is the antithesis of what Montessori should be. Is it's, yeah, it's very personal, very individual, and finding your own way and meeting children and adults where they are in that journey.
Yeah. All right. So again, thank you very, very much, Charlotte. This has been very enlightening. And I wish you guys all well down there in Mexico and everybody else.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. So how great was that, right? Charlotte is really an expert in Montessori and a kind person. And I really learned a lot from her. And I hope you feel the same as well. And please let me know. Go to my Instagram at apparentlyparent and tell me what you thought about this episode and what's your biggest takeaway and what do you feel about Montessori education? Are you in that kind of education? Did you put your kids there? Do you practice it at home? Let me know. I really want to know. Anyway, I really think you should check out her resources and her website and learn from her more if that's of interest to you. So I will put the links in the show notes of this episode. Again, it's on apparentlyparent.com/43. So that's that for today. Thank you so much for listening to the Apparently Parent podcast. It really means the world to me that you're here with me in this mission of making parenting better, moving from chaos to harmony and creating better relationships with children all around the world. I would really appreciate it if you would go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review as short or as long as you'd like. It really helps me get in front of more ears, more people, more parents who need to know about this and spread the word that parenting can be also fun. And that's that for today. I will see you again next week with a fresh new episode. Bye-bye.